Welcome to Wednesday. It's April 9th. It's Tuesday, actually. Did I just say Wednesday? It's Tuesday, April 9th. I have Steve Greenfield in the studio to remind me what day it is. We're going to talk top 150, Arizona Attorney General, the Delta Eclipse flight, and whatever else I can get Steve to talk on. Steve, welcome to the show this morning. How are you?
Paul, it's good to be back. Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. It's so great whenever Kyle gets out there on the road and I can finally do what I want on this show, which is have Steve Greenfield on. I know Kyle and so many of our mutual friends are at the Kane Friends and Family event in Lexington, Kentucky. And so if you're there, we miss you. We wish you we were with you, but we'll hold down the fort while you're doing nothing but, you know, enjoying David Kane's hospitality. One of the best events in automotive for sure.
I'm one of the best guys in automotive, for
without
sure.
Without a doubt. Just want to let you know, if you haven't, AsotuCon is only 35 days away. And
wow, that's amazing.
I know it. It's so soon and so far away. But once we tick under 30 in the AsotuVerse over here at home base, we go into full-fledged mode. Actually, we live in that spot. We're a startup.
So, Paul, quick question for you. Like, if I'm going to make the investment to come up there as an attendee, mm-hmm. What do you hope on the last day when I'm walking out of the room and I reflect back as an attendee, what do you hope is top of mind for an attendee?
Gotcha. Two things. First of all, our premise for making AsotuCon is that most conferences send you home feeling exhausted and overwhelmed. And so AsotuCon is specifically curated to help you leave feeling energized and inspired. So I know it's kind of a high level thing, but that's the first win. If you leave feeling energized, ready to get back in the store and make some change or back to your industry partner, develop some products, serve dealers more, number one. The second thing right behind that only happens if you have an implementable thing. And I'm satisfied, and at AsotuCon, we're satisfied with one, right? Everybody, right. Fill your notebook for sure, and people do. But if you have one thing, whether that's one relationship, whether that's one practical best practice to implement, one thing to try, we hope you go home with one thing. And if you look through the session list, there are lots of one things in there. Even if you just read through the agenda, whether you're fixed ops, you're in marketing, whether you're leading the dealership, thinking about mergers and acquisitions, we have a full kind of buffet list of things for anyone showing up. So go home inspired, energized, and ready to implement the one thing. And I often feel like the one thing is best when connected with a person that you met or a conversation that you had.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, we've got a lot of conferences in the industry, and I think that those two things, you know, a lack of enthusiasm and being worn out. And then most importantly, do I have something tangible I can take back and implement? And if you can check both those boxes, I mean, kudos to you guys for doing this.
Yeah. Well, we'll do our best. And I think anyone who's been there, who was there last year, is going to get a lot more and more intentionality of what you experienced last year. We've expanded into some breakfast sessions this year. We felt like that was an underutilized time at most conferences, knowing that, like, you know, half of the people won't come down to breakfast anyway, 2/3. So between 7 and 8 o'clock every day, there's something going on. On day one, there is a WOCAN, Women of Color Automotive Network breakfast, where they're going to have panels and their community is going to get together. Day two, the Maryland Auto Dealer Association is actually holding their annual meeting in one of the studio rooms.
That's clever. Good for you.
They reached out to us and they said, hey, because they showed up last year kind of like to kind of think, feel their way around, like, who are these people? Like, what are they trying to do in our town? And saw a lot of value, built a great relationship. Yeah. So they're getting, actually, they said, like, very higher than usual dealer turnout because of being tethered to events. So we're excited to host them. Also, this is an out-of-the-box one. On day two, between 7 and 8, I am bringing the Daily Family Therapist in for a session. Basically around how can you be a successful, busy professional and a great parent. 10 years ago, you know, I didn't realize the drain that my driven nature was having on my family. We ended up getting his family counselor. He changed the trajectory of our family. And I posted something on LinkedIn about, I don't know, it was about
a
few months ago. And people overwhelmingly responded to, like, we would love something like this. So we're having it. I'm bringing him with me. So 7 to 8, we're going to answer questions. We're going to go through some best practices. And
so you're not like lying on the couch on stage. We're not going to have a therapy session like in vitro.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, but it's probably going to end up being that because you can ask.
That'd be cool. That would be great.
I'd
love to see. I would pay to see that. One of your therapy sessions. Just let me be a fly on the wall.
Just get a couch. They're a lot different than they used to be. His name is Mike Lynch. If you go to asotocon.com, you can actually, if you search the agenda, you can see more information about the session, but you won't find him anywhere on social media, which is probably why he's a really, really great counselor and marriage family therapist. So yeah, we're going to have a little something for everyone. And can't forget, I can't wait for everyone to meet Will Gadara, the New York Times bestselling author of Unreasonable Hospitality. Kyle and I spent some time with him in New York City a couple weeks ago, and he did not disappoint. You know, some people are different in person than you see him on TV, and you know, he's amazing. And I think he's going to sow some really important principles into automotive, specifically around hospitality. And it's funny, we were in our podcast conversation, and it's out now. If you go to Auto Collabs by Asotu, if you search that on a podcast platform, you can see it or hear it. When he was thinking about hospitality and automotive, he wasn't even thinking about fixed ops. He was talking about these sales things, and I kind of chimed in and I said, you know, I think the bigger opportunity is actually in service. Everyone shows up, you know, not wanting to be there in the first place. So you have a real opportunity to turn that around, and you could see the light bulb go off for a minute. And so hopefully bring some of that, and that's some of the energized and inspired feeling you have when you leave from our final keynote there. So
what's the biggest surprise that you've had spending time with him where you had like, oh, wow, I wouldn't have expected that? Because you spent some time with him now, face to face.
Right? Yep. Yeah. I think the biggest surprise, I've spent a time with a lot of people who have done, you know, like big things or written popular books or celebrities. And, you know, I think the biggest surprise is always when you meet someone who is 100% focused on you when they're in the room with you. They're not somewhere else. They're not thinking. And his mind was actively working on questions and problems specific to the questions we were asking him, and obviously someone as sharp as he is, a very quick study caught on very quickly. I knew that right away when he walked in and he saw these "Love People More Than You Love Cars" shirts on, and he looked at it and he's like, "Oh, I like that." And fortunately, we brought one for him, and so he put it on immediately, and he was like, "This is," he said, "This is a shirt I'll wear." So, So I think that was probably the biggest surprise, and so hopefully you can come, hear him speak, and then get to meet him in person. We got some thoughts and plans on how we can maybe get him a little bit more dialed into the auto ecosystem.
Nice. I can't wait.
All right. We're going to talk about some news today. And while I have you, I'd love to get your hot takes on some things that are going on in automotive. AutomotiveVentures.com, you release an email every week that is kind of what you're paying attention to, stories and some commentary. And then once a month, you do your Intel report, which is a little bit more in depth on a certain topic or two. So these are two things that were on your list. We talked about them yesterday on the show. Just would love to get your thinking around these. Number one, the Automotive News Top 150 dealer list came out yesterday. A lot of movement on that list by some, some surprises, some things we probably expected. What's your overall take on the list this year and how it might be reflecting some of the things that are going on?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's always a list to check out. And, you know, wherever you are in the automotive ecosystem, pay attention to it, right? Because these are the dealers that are getting more concentrated, you know, have an aggressive acquisition policy and are rolling up, you know, dealers, right? So for every sell, there's a buyer. And these folks are the primary buyers rolling up and tucking in dealerships. I think a few observations. One is, you know, we are getting more concentration amongst fewer buyers, right? And dealers, I think, are seeing opportunities to consolidate and take out costs, centralize things like accounting, HR, et cetera. But you also can up the sophistication around centralizing vehicle acquisition, for example, centralizing training, centralizing processes, et cetera, right? So I think dealers are seeing, say, whether I go from one dealer to five or five to 15 or 15 to 50, there are different breaks there and different things that I can start to centralize and bring competencies and best practices across dealerships. On the flip side, I think it's pretty interesting, Paul. You know, I've been almost 25 years in the industry, and you know, you look at any other industry, there's been a lot more consolidation, right? Yeah. For whatever reason, and we can hypothesize about this, and it'd be good to get your thoughts too. Why don't we ever break through one owner owning more than 250 to 300 dealerships. And part of that, are these OEM franchise frameworks where you can only own so many Mercedes stores or BMW stores, because they want to make sure that, you know, no one sort of vendor to them from the OEM's perspective gets too much weight, right? Mm-hmm. Too much influence. But at the same time, you would think that by now we would have owners that had 1,000 stores or 3,000 stores, like any other industry, there's a lot more concentration than automotive. So it's something for, you know, the viewers to think about, is like, why haven't we seen much more aggressive concentration at the top? I have some hypotheses, but it's interesting for you to think about too, is like, in 20 years, will we still be as fragmented? Like, will we see a lot more 200 or 300 store owners?
Yep.
But are we ever going to see one owner owning 1,000 stores? And it looks like we may never see that in automotive.
That's a very interesting question. And when you originally said, I wonder what the thoughts are on this. I mean, I think if you asked us 24 months ago, we would have a little bit of a different perspective on this, because there's so much talk around agency model. I think it made a lot more sense when that was a key narrative, that scale of that size would make sense. But since we've moved away from that conversation, the reason I think one of the two things, number one, I think it's just the legacy of the industry, and the auto industry and franchise network has been such a part of the fabric of local communities. I think that those roots are so deep that they're not easily pulled up. And I can't say the same, like, even if you think about some of the things that like a Walmart brought to the table when it came to like hardware stores and local things of that nature, they didn't have the kind of economic power that an auto dealership has. Therefore, I think they didn't have the economic impact that an auto dealership has. So I think that it's just like when you pull up something that has deep roots, you're like, oh, let me pull this one up and move it. And there are some things that look like they don't have that deep roots. And then when you realize, you start digging it up, you're like, look at this. And I think that's the auto industry. So I think that naturally slows the pace of it down. I also think it's very difficult to deliver at scale across multiple geographies. And I think that it's easy to underestimate that. I think that that's one of the founding reasons that OEMs understand they need dealers, because it is difficult to execute at scale across multiple ways. People are expected to do business. Driving habits, a big difference across the country. You go like to Oklahoma and it's a lot different than you're going to get in Ohio, for instance. So those are a couple of things that come to top of mind when you ask that question. What's your prevailing thought?
No, I think you're right too. I mean, I weigh more into the latter. You know, we have some of the investors in our funds who are dealers who have bought stores outside of sort of their core geography and then eventually divested them because it's just too much to manage them when they're too far remote, right? Yeah. So I think there is that. I mean, if you're like a Lithia or an AutoNation, you need to have a lot of systems and processes and there's pros and cons of that, right? You lose some of what you mentioned, the former, the local sense of community, autonomy, decision-making, et cetera. You know, you can become the McDonald's of a dealership by having uniform processes across the nation, but it's really, really hard to implement those, given that there are strengths to having nuances and idiosyncrasies in local geographies, right? So I think, you know, if you and I were running a big conglomerate of dealerships, we would wrestle with this, right? Mm-hmm. How much do you allow the local GM, the local management team to have autonomy to cater to the needs in that local geography versus how much do we centralize and, you know, have uniform processes across the nation? And I imagine there's a lot of conversations in these boardrooms of these larger dealer groups, especially the ones that are assimilating, right, and growing very quickly. It's like, how much do we start to implement uniform processes,
right,
or how much do we allow the autonomy of the local operator? And we see different philosophies, right? There are very different philosophies out there. I think there are pros and cons to each, but either way, you can't just, one size doesn't fit all. If it did, we would have the McDonald's of dealerships, and it just is not the way that the industry has played out.
That's right. And that's why I also think that like the middle is getting so thick. Right. We're starting to see these small groups become mid-sized groups.
You're not talking about my waistline right now, right?
No, definitely not. No, you're always looking trim and on the go. And so I think we're just starting to see a lot of that, like that center point. If you look at the difference between the rankings on this, between, say, like position 40 and position 70, you're going to see very little play in size. right? There's just, it could go either way just by, you know, several hundred units or a thousand units. And so I think this is a more rational way to scale. And a lot of these groups are scaling relatively regionally, right? Yep. 3 hours away, 5 hours away, right? Some of them even like leverage, I know one group, they leverage a private plane and they have stores that are probably about 600 miles apart and they'll visit all the regions, no problem, in one day and, you know, be at home for dinner. So I think those are going to continue. We'll see. And a thousand's a long way to go. I don't even know if Brian DeBoer's got the track speed in him to get to 1,000. We'll see though.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely see.
Got the energy for it though.
We could do an over under on it. Like, you know, what does the industry look like in 10 or 20 years, but it'd be interesting to see what people think. But I think this would be a good topic of conversation. We could maybe foster some of this on LinkedIn and see what people think.
That's a great conversation. Let's do that. Second story I want to talk about is Tesla's alleged decision to halt the production of its low cost EV. Tesla hasn't said this is true yet, but Reuters cited five sources, three people, several documents say like, hey, they're laying off this, leaning into the robotaxi. Elon Musk came out shortly after this, said Reuters is lying as usual. And he also said, we're going to show you the robotaxi on August 8th. What do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, he's got to be challenged with, you know, where Tesla is currently, right? I think a lot of the models are long in the tooth in terms of like they need a redesign. It hasn't really been Tesla's MO since the beginning to have redesigned models like other automakers, part of the reason that they have higher operating profits. And, you know, I think that he's been very clear that, you know, their model is going to be like Gillette, right? Give away the handles and sell the razor blades. In his case, the car is just a vehicle to deliver software. And, you know, he's always about full self-driving, and full self-driving is a future. And, you know, I think in the next breath, he said, by May 8th, we're going to have an announcement about, you know, robotaxis. And what that means, we don't know exactly. We don't think that's going to be a brand new car that's a robotaxi, just more progress around full self-driving. So I think that if he can get more vehicles into more consumers' hands and then upsell them software products, he can be valued as a tech company. The threat now is, does he start to look like an automaker with all an automaker's challenges? Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, we're producing more vehicles than there's demand for. We're sitting on inventory, so we need to discount those cars. Is there enough demand? He's got more competition in the EV space. So retrenching. And then you have the Chinese threat too. Mm-hmm. And he obviously spends time in China and is very close to China. There's really good quality product coming out of China at very, very low prices.
Yeah.
And he may have just realized now, I can't fight a price war with these folks. I got to stay with a premium vehicle. So imagine all these things are bouncing around in his head. I think in an ideal world, he would have a cheap car that he could effectively almost give away to folks and subsidize because he was making so much profit off of software.
Yeah.
And that has kind of been the vision and what Wall Street analysts have underwritten. And that's why he's got this crazy high valuation compared to their automakers. But I think he's starting to feel the strain of what the business model has to become. And I think that the threat is that he may start being valued, looked upon and valued more like a traditional automaker.
You know, there's yesterday in the show, I said, it's very challenging to look at Tesla like an automaker. It's easy to, for one sense, right? They make cars and that's been their primary product. But when you look at the other verticals that they're building out, the autonomous robots, the sheer amount of AI data that they have, like visual human interaction data, is more than anybody else because of what the cars capture. And so, like we've said, Tesla is an energy company. They're a robotics company. They're an AI company, right? Which is far more than you could say for any of the traditional automakers, right? They are car companies. So he's definitely playing 3D chess. And so like trying to make sense of this just through an automaker window, I think is never going to make full sense. But we'll see. It's certainly always entertaining. We'll see what he comes up with in May. We'll see what they release in August. And I guess just like with Tesla, we'll see.
Yeah, I think if I had to forecast, I think that, you know, sometime in the next 5 years, Tesla will split up the business because, you know, he needs to get rid of the anchor, which is this perception that he's an automaker. Mm-hmm. And then to your point, free up, you know, these other assets. You know, we're a battery technology company, we're a power company, we're an AI company and a robotics company. And I think that, you know, at some point, Wall Street analysts and investors will realize probably broken up, it's worth more than the sum of its parts.
Yep.
And then he can't be accused of being an automaker. Like, get rid of that. And he can say, like, look, that was phase one of our growth.
Right.
Now we're on to phase two. And being an automaker really doesn't really matter anymore. And, you know, there's speculation that eventually, once he figures out full self-driving, that he'll license that to the other automakers who, by the way, have burned billions of dollars and don't see any closer to having a full self-driving technology. So we'll see how it plays out. But I would not be surprised if, like, you know, in the next 5 years, you see Tesla effectively start to split up the businesses and to unlock value.
Right on. All right. Where are we at? Oh, man, we'd like to talk. We're having a good time. All right, got two quick stories. So these are new ones. Desert Toyota in Tucson, Arizona has agreed to a $60,000 settlement for not honoring advertised prices, the Arizona Attorney General's office has reported. So basically, this store has allegedly left out mandatory accessory costs and reconditioning fees from online pricing. Very sensitive topic, but things like exterior protective coating, door edge guards, door cups, window tint, etc., saying these are mandatory expenses that were not disclosed as a cost of the vehicle that the customer could not decline. Attorney General Chris Myers stressed that advertised prices must include all mandatory add-ons. The store did not admit to wrongdoing, but opted to settle and resolve the matter, which is $40,000 in civil penalties, $10,000 for customer restitution, and $10,000 in legal fees. And they must now include all mandatory fees in advertised prices and preserve price quoting, customer communications. That means they keep every conversation they had for an entire year. Big conversation right now. And this is just one example, I think, where an attorney general said, we're going to, you know, customer complaint. Attorney general said, we're going to make a ruling.
Yeah. I mean, I think that your transparency for the consumer is tantamount. And I think that your dealers, for the most part, you know, try as much as they can to represent cars, whether it's online or in the showroom, with transparency. So good for the dealer to settle and move on. And hopefully, you know, other dealers learn from this and just make sure that they continue to double down on transparency for the consumer.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be the name of the game. A lot of things going on this year. Cars rule, going, stopping, going to pick back up.
Right.
A lot of conversation. It's so funny how fast that disappeared. Like from conversation, it was all we talked about. And then we got the one ruling. We were actually in DC the day we got the stay, and Mike Stanton walked into where we were and he told us, like, before anybody knew about it. And like, I felt like within 3 days, no one even talked about it
anymore. Right, right.
Like, yeah. I didn't even hear anything about it at NAD, but it certainly hasn't gone all the way away, and we'll be back to it. But yeah, this is just a little kind of thing out of Arizona to keep the fire burning. Last but not least, last time you were on, we talked about Delta shuttling people around in Porsches on the tarmac. I was like, great, another Delta story when Steve's going to be on. Yesterday, the big talk, we haven't even said the word until now, but $6 billion worth of consumer spending hit the market due to the total solar eclipse. Delta Airlines jumped on the action, offering a special flight from Dallas to Detroit, aligning with the path of the solar eclipse, giving passengers a once-in-a-lifetime experience at 35,000 feet. So passengers, excited children, Delta employees, they got all this pre-flight party gear. They got, you know, solar glasses made by Warby Parker, branded eclipse bags, moon pies, like all the snacks. And, you know, it was basically geared around creating an experience for its customers, right? It wasn't a big initiative, but, you know, everybody got to see the eclipse. Delta doing what Delta does. I don't know if you got an invite for this, Steve, as one of their very
I did not. Customers. I have to admit, I did not. But, you know, one thing I can't reconcile. So you got out and saw the eclipse yesterday?
Yes. Yeah, Syracuse, we were in the totality, yeah.
Yeah, so cloudy, the sun was like, you know, at 12 o'clock noon sort of, you know, and you're on a plane. How on earth do you look out the windows and look up? I don't really understand how that would have worked. I mean, like, yeah, you have a sunroof or a moonroof on the plane, unless the pilot's constantly going swerving side to side.
What they said is they took a special flight path so everyone on the plane could see the sun. So if you say special flight path, the only way you can see one side of the plane, the same thing you saw, is a full 180. Right?
There you go. Just go in circles.
Did a big circle, slightly tipped up, I guess, so you can see the sun. I will say from, like, I read a number of accounts of being on the flight, and I think that the general sentiment was like, I'll always remember it, but it wasn't that great.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Cause I never actually got to see the sun on the flight.
Right. Yeah. Were you in the path at all? yesterday?
We were close. I think we were 80-85% down here in Atlanta, so I didn't get right under, but it was cool. It was cool. Definitely a memory, and I guess we're not going to see another one for 20 years or something. So
I guess something like that. When we watched it at my house, we have kind of like overlooked this like kind of valley. So we had a really clear view of like one side versus the other side. So we could see dark on one side and light on the other side.
Oh, wow.
But it was kind of cloudy in Syracuse, go figure. So we were catching glimpses of it as the clouds, you know, it was a full cloud cover. So it was fun. But the coolest part was how all the birds stopped chirping.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we heard this lone rooster somewhere just going to be like, I'm about to wake everybody up. Something's
going on. Yeah, exactly. Sun's up. Sun's up. Yes. Breakfast time.
I know. Well, good on Delta for getting into that. Steve, as always, thanks for joining me in the show. I'm looking forward to seeing you in 35 days, and we'll touch base with you soon. Let's go on LinkedIn and start that conversation about who's going to get to 1,000 stores, if ever.
Great.